evening, folks. You have tuned in to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig, the podcast where you learn all about the food personalities. You learn their heart. You learn what makes them tick. You learn how they became successful. And sometimes you learn some other very interesting things about them. So thank you for tuning in tonight. We are lucky enough to have from Charlottesville, Virginia's Ivy Inn, I'll call the Ivy Inn now. Years ago when I first met this fella, it was the kind of the new place with him, but now it is the maybe the backbone of fine dining of Charlottesville, Virginia. And we have Chef Angelo Vangelopoulos. Now, you say it the way I'm supposed to say it, Angelo.
Vangelopoulos, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try. I thought I was doing good over the years. I really like your last name, Vangelopoulos. And as a chef, I always thought Chef Craig Hartman. It's just there's no ring to that thing, but Vangelopoulos. Now, if my name was Vangelopoulos, that would have taken it over the top for me. I probably would have got 3 Michelin stars for having that name. But anyway, we're going to welcome Angelo. And how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
We go back a long way, right?
About, yes, sir.
16
years in July.
See, he's younger than me, so he can remember better. 16 years. And Angelo, you came down here and Ivy Inn, what a beautiful strategic location. How did you guys find that restaurant, first of all?
My parents and I decided we were going to shop for a restaurant together. I grew up and was raised in Northern Virginia and bussing tables, washing dishes, running a cash register, making pizzas, slicing gyro, and running deliveries around Springfield, Virginia. So
nice.
That's where I came from. And when it came time to decide a career path, it was easy to say, well, this is fun.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stay in restaurants as long as I can. And so I decided I would go to culinary school. My parents were not pleased. It was
What did they want you to do?
Be an accountant.
They wanted you to be an accountant?
Definitely. Really good math skills. I was a terrible student, but when it came to my business classes and my math classes, I was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I would have never lasted 4 years or 6 years or 8 years of college. There's just no way. I was way too ADD to do something like that. And cooking school had such a draw because you could go for 2 years and immerse yourself in studying one thing very intensely.
Sure.
Use your hands, short classes, 3 weeks at a time. You're doing something new and fresh. The immersion was just amazing. And that's really what appealed to me, I think. And working in restaurants as a kid is fun.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't recognize the backbreaking hard work that it really is until you start to get older and your hips
start and your
to
back
give
starts
out,
breaking.
You break your ankle, you know, stupid things, and you realize what a tough business it is to be in. And so I relate now to my parents who were pissed when my SAT scores came back and I had like a 660 in math, and my mom it was just the next thing that made her erupt
sure.
about this stupid cooking school in New York. You got to be kidding me. You need to go to a real college. And, you know, my parents are restaurant people. Get support from the restaurant. Like, no, get a real job, you know, a 401k and 9 to 5.
You know, I have that same story about my children, too. But we're talking about you today.
Yeah,
Real quick. Tell everybody where you went to school.
The Culinary Institute of America, Hyde Park, New York, your alma mater.
That's right. My alma mater. Let's get that straight first. But hey, we're going to get back to the Ivy Inn in a second, but Culinary Institute of America, how did you feel about that education?
Oh, it was awesome. Really had the best time of my life. The 2 years I was there, the friends I made, still very close with a lot of them, and some who still cook, some who have nothing to do with restaurants or cooking or food at all. But really, best time of my life. I mean, it was 18 to 20. And it was, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about other people and learned a lot about our career path. And
who would you think during those 2 years was your biggest influence there at that school?
I had three.
Yeah.
Three that are probably
good.
Equally for me. And I'd say Chef John O'Hare, I had for Grand Manger.
Mm-hmm.
He just expected more of me than anyone else had up to that point and pushed me and berated me and ragged me.
Sure.
Until the last day, he was like, you see, this is, I knew you had it in you. You could do this. You know, I got an A. As much ragging on you, it's hard to believe I would have gotten an A in his class.
Right.
As much shit as I got. Chef Corky Clark, I had for Fish Kitchen.
Yeah.
He took a liking to me for some reason, maybe because I'm from Virginia and he's from Appalachia. I don't know why, yeah. but he was much kinder to me than others. But I learned a lot of lessons from him, still correspond with him and with Chef Ron DeSantis, who's the CMC, yeah. who was E-Room chef at the time. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, his passion for teaching and for cooking and for food, just, you know, you suck it up, even if you aren't even trying.
Yeah.
You know, I was a willing participant, but even if you weren't trying, his enthusiasm and love for it just was all-encompassing.
Yeah, but don't
lessons.
You think, though, you know, looking back and you're thinking about these teachers, and then we'll talk about the folks that were in your class, and you say they took the chef took a liking to you, and maybe not a liking to others. What do you remember there being those students that were there, but they were just there, that they weren't really soaking it up?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, there were definitely a couple who were there because they had to go somewhere.
Yeah.
It was that time of their life. Their parents were making them choose something, and they went there. Big mistake.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people ask me all the time, what's, you know, best cooking school to go to, or blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's not about what school you go to. It's about what you put into it and whether or not it's in your heart to begin with, and how hard you're going to work and how much you're going to dedicate yourself. Volunteer, stage, do whatever you have to do and get your hands dirty. I don't care really where you go to school. That being said, you can apply it to not every kid who goes to Harvard Law School is going to be the lawyer that you want defending you, for God's sake. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. It's all about the person and all about what they're going to put into it. But there are definitely some of them who were just kind of skating along, and they have the same degree I did.
Now, do you have any people you graduated with that are doing well right now that you can?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. A few of them really, really good, actually.
And did you know?
You ever heard of Chipotle?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite classmates lived next door to me. We did wines together. We did bake shop together, Steve Ells. Lots of late night partying with Steve Ells back when he was 22. He was a graduate of UC Boulder. We knew he was going to do something
to find partying. No, I'm just kidding.
Sombreros Steve and shot glasses.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty awesome. So yeah, of course he tops the class. Dave McKelvey, another one who's an Emerald alum for about 20 years now. And he pretty much nowadays he just schedules Emerald's culinary life. He's like head culinary director for him now.
Yeah.
A guy working for Rock Bottom, you know, the head culinary guy for their company.
Yeah, sure.
Couple others who are kind of doing their own thing in restaurants. Nothing we've heard of here, but, you know, a couple guys who've done, you know, big things up in New York too. I mean, actually Dave Carmichael, who was opening pastry chef for every big name French guy you've heard of up there.
Right.
He's worked in every single one of those kitchens for making a lot more money than I'll ever see. Really talented guy.
Yeah. Cool. So, yeah, really, well, cause I think what I'm thinking is, you know, and doing these, interviews with chefs, and as we're trying to pull in, you know, what is the commonality? Where, how do we know someone's going to be successful in this business? Were there some folks there that we didn't think were going to be successful, but they ended up doing good work? Or were you right on? You're like, well, that person's not going to make it. They didn't.
Well, you know, 71 other kids I graduated with, 17 others I was close with, you know, the whole two-year program. I can't say I know where all of their whereabouts are, but I hear through the grapevine from one and the other, you know, about this guy, this and this guy, that. And of course, Facebook's kind of opened that door a lot too.
Yeah, true.
I try not to think too much about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple guys who I thought would be in the business for a long time to come. And, you know, one's like a cop now, and one's a karate instructor, and one's in computer. So, you know, it's funny the paths people choose.
I use a lot of karate in my kitchens, to tell you the truth. But, yeah, getting back, I think it's cool because, you know, if we have listeners, especially let's say some young folks and they're thinking about, or older folks, thinking about going to a school or a chef school, what's the one thing you would tell them if they were headed to your school? What would be your advice?
Go work for 6 months in the best restaurant you can get to accept you to work for free. And simply take a stage job or a volunteer job and really see what it's like, the real days, the kinds of hours the chef puts in, and immerse yourself that way. If you still are that excited about it after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, okay, think about enrolling in school. But, you know, to me, the fun wears off.
Yeah, right.
And the reality of this is hard work, you damn well better love it. Because if you don't, it will break you and destroy you, and you will go do something else, you know, less, I want to say less worthy, but something much
breaking
different.
And destruction. That's what you're going to get if you don't damn well love this business.
That's pretty close.
Even if you love it, you're going to get some breaking and some destruction.
Right.
Cool. Well, let's get back now to the IVM, because how did you find that building? I mean, I think, you know,
you're still mad
about
that.
You have the entrepreneur.
You're still mad about that because you missed that
building. You know, I'm a little upset, but you're an entrepreneur. You grew up in an entrepreneurial family. Right. And so it was just kind of natural for you, right, to just say, hey, we're going to go do this thing. And I guess your parents must have made peace with the fact you went to chef school. And said, if he's gone to chef school, I mean, what was the moment that your parents finally accepted that and said, hey, Angela, what do you think about, let's look for a restaurant? Did you bring it up or did they bring it up?
Shopping for a restaurant together. Yeah. Probably as soon as I graduated, my dad made a point to tell me, you're young, you're full of energy, don't waste too much time. Before you decide to do something, you let me know when you're ready.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, are you out of your mind? I'm 20 years old. I just got out of school. I don't know anything yet, much less come anywhere close to calling myself a chef. I'm a cook. I'm proud to be a cook. All I'll ever be is a cook. Don't call me chef.
Yeah.
And I figured I really felt as though I had a lot to learn. I worked for a couple of really good chefs, D.C. and San Diego, and learned a lot of good things. And then at 24, still very undertrained, still very underexperienced, opened a restaurant in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
We had decided to start shopping together. It was my mom, my dad, my then girlfriend, now wife of 15 years. And we were shopping the DC, Maryland, Metro, Virginia area. And everything was either overpriced or a horrible location or the place was falling down or you name it. There was a reason not to like it. And so we broadened after about 6 months of frustration, we broadened our search and decided we would consider moving away from our comfort zone.
Right.
And so as soon as we did that, the IVN was listed by Charlie Kabash anonymously.
Yeah.
Had to send in a non-disclosure statement to say, hey, we won't talk about what restaurant this is for sale. It's a long-standing restaurant in Charlottesville. I'd never even stepped foot in Charlottesville, Virginia before.
Yeah.
And my wife's 10-year high school reunion, we went down to Eden, North Carolina, met her friends. Had a great time, and on the way back, stopped in Charlottesville to scope out this restaurant, meet the owner, Barbara Shiflett, and no kidding, we get out of the car, walk into the front yard, my two dogs walk out there, start running around, one of them takes a dump right there in the yard, I'm like, this is like home, and there's a garden.
That was it, it was the
dog. I'm like,
dog.
I'm looking for the bag to pick it up, you know, pick up the poop, and it was a good start. The dogs obviously liked it, they were comfortable, we go inside, and I'm just like, you know, this is something we could do. We can work with. And it needed a lot of work. I mean, really, it was not to say it was in disrepair as much as it wasn't my style, the inside. But, you know, we figured with a little bit of capital investment, we could do something with it. And so 16 years later, here we are. I just try to keep the place from falling down now because it's an old house. And you walk around and the floors are soft. And, you know, the glass is cling, cling, cling on the table as you walk across the dining room a little too fast.
Yeah, sure.
So
I've been there.
It's
I know.
Funny. Yeah, thank
I
you.
Know.
That's right.
You know, some steel downstairs and some turnbuckles. You ever use
those?
Thank
you, sir. Yeah.
They work really great. You
right.
Know but don't ratchet them up too tight or you could crack the walls.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want you to know.
I'm going to bring you over when we're ready.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a beautiful location.
Yeah,
and,
very lucky.
Especially if you like baseball, right?
Oh, yeah.
The baseball stadium for UVA is right. I mean, almost backs up.
Batting practice is pretty awesome.
Faulkner Stadium, my favorite.
Yep. No, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. We're very lucky. Really, really blessed to be where we are. Love it.
Yeah. So now tell us a little bit about some of the places you worked. I know you worked for Roberto Donna.
Right.
I know you worked at La Colline.
Worked at La Colline, yeah.
I used to have, when I was the chef at the Marbury Hotel, which is now the Latham, I had a guy, Jose. And Jose was
Galeas?
Jose Galeas.
Yeah, God, he's
and he
man.
Worked for me at night and for La Colline, Robert in the morning and used to do all the prep and
he
then come
amazing.
Work for me.
He was amazing.
He was a great guy. And two jobs full time.
Yeah. He was by the time I got to him, he was in his early 50s, I want to say, or maybe late 40s. He was the full time garmanger chef at La Colline. If he ever left, that place would have left with him quickly. Amazing guy.
Yeah.
He took a shot at running a restaurant in McLean with one of the former La Colline partners. It didn't work out, but really, I mean, nothing to do with his cooking ability. That guy
always
was awesome.
Busy. I got to tell you real quick. One time he was late. He called me up and he said, "Chef, I'm sorry, but my wife have it the baby." And I'm like, "Oh, you had a baby? That's fantastic. And he's like, well, we had it in the car on the way to the hospital. I deliver it myself. You know, they're in the car. And I'm just like, are you kidding? But I'll be there in 10 minutes, he says. You know? And I'm just like, no, take the night off. That's the kind of guy. So
yep.
I was always wondering if you knew.
That's
Jose.
Awesome. No, he's the man. Absolutely.
But he always talked about Chef Robert.
Yeah.
How did you end up at that particular, look, you're living in Northern Virginia. You go to work in D.C. There are so many restaurants. How did you pick La Colline?
They were hiring.
You looked in the newspaper. Hiring.
Well, no, I was up at CIA.
Right.
And it was my last couple weeks of school, and I had some grand thoughts of, I want to go work in Greece. I thought I was going to go work in Greece somewhere and slave for a couple of years and learn to speak a little better and connect with my family and et cetera. And got really frustrated really quickly and said, I'll go to work in Washington. I'll live at home and save some money.
Yeah.
Work in D.C. La Colline, Chef Vache, the chef de cuisine, was a CIA grad who'd worked for Robert for probably 25 years, I think, by the time he finally left.
Yeah.
But he had an ad up at the placement office. And so I called him and he said, well, when can you come for an interview? I said, well, I graduate next Friday. I'll be there Saturday. And so I showed up at noon on Saturday, the day after graduation. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm sure I was looking pretty haggard. It was a long day, night, and then drive home. And so I come to interview the guy at 12, and I didn't even have my resume prepared or anything. I brought my knives. And he's like, so we talked for a little bit. And I said, look, I don't know if you want to hire me or not. I was like, I don't have my resume ready. I said, but put me to work, and I'll work for as long as you feel like I need to prove I want the job, then I'm worth it. And that was all I needed to say. That was it. He hired me on the spot, and I started working for $8 an hour. It was pretty awesome.
Nice.
But I went right into a real...
That's $3.75 more than I got when I got out of chef school.
Of course, that was good. Of course it was. But no kidding. Like, I walked into a real restaurant job, as far as I'm concerned, because it was 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. And you were, you know, the shift started at 2, but you couldn't get your job done if you were there much after 12, and you worked for a couple hours for free. And then the kitchen was spotless like you've never seen. Mm-hmm. I've yet to see it since. I mean, I've worked in a lot of nice places, and I mean, nothing rivals how clean that place was kept. So that was hard work. It was really hard work. I worked on a line with guys, some French Africans, one guy who was the sauce cook for 20 years, you know, another guy was the fish cook for 8 years. And then here I am, this new graduate kid, 20 years old. These guys are, you know, family men in their 30s and 40s and been cooking forever and have seen a lot of punk ass kids like me come through. And I don't know, after a couple months, I mean, it really sucked for a while. I did staff meal every day for like 22 people for dinner every day. I'm staff meal. It was
nice. That's what you get when you're a new guy.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. It was, man. And it was literally, it was like starch, veg, protein, a salad, and a dessert every day, ready at 4 o'clock. The whole line goes through and then you get your plate. So you're the last one to sit down. And then you get up first to clean up your stuff. And you don't get paid for that half hour that you cooked, that you served and cleaned up afterwards, too.
Yeah,
like they docked you half an hour a day for staff. Wow. But it was a real introduction to what I could expect. And I'd see a chef who was there all the time, who worked long days.
Mm-hmm.
Robert, not only was he a French master chef, the guy could fix anything. And he would come in on Sundays, decide his old refrigerators. He didn't like the fact he had a light switch to switch the lights on and off from inside the fridge. So he decided to disconnect all of those and actually make everything door triggered. So when so he rewired the whole thing. I mean, it was just crazy the stuff this guy could do. If you ever asked him a technical question about something, you better have a half an hour to stop what you're doing and listen to, like, hood filter systems and, you know, BTUs and, like, anything you want to ask about. Like, you better be ready to stop prepping for a while because he's going to talk your ear off about everything he knows. It was a great, great experience. And haven't been anywhere quite like that since.
Good. That's a good foundation.
Yeah, it was a good place to be. And friends of my dad who were restaurant guys, Greek restaurant guys, who we'd see from time to time. And, you know, my one day off, we would be doing something and be family related, Greek people related. And they'd be asking me about the job and where are you working? You must be making a lot of money. And I'm like, well, actually, no, I take home about $300 a week. And they're like, what? I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, yeah. And I said, but put 300 in my pocket, I put 1,000 in my head. Like, that's the idea. That's the plan. Learn as much as I can right now while I still can. When you're young enough, people are willing to keep teaching you, and you're able to continue to absorb it like a sponge. And so that was the plan. And so for a couple of years, I did that. I moved out to the West Coast. I worked for a CIA grad out there at a Southwestern restaurant, got my first sous chef job. It was good. Learned to speak Spanish.
Sure.
Got immersed in a whole different kind of cooking, different pantry. Learned about chilies. Did a lot of American, just straight up American grill food. Busy restaurant. It was really neat. The owner was an open books kind of guy. Would show you P&Ls and show you what he made last month.
Yeah, right.
And really just kind of teach you everything. So that was good. It was really, to have someone. I mean, I'm 22 years old, and this guy's sitting down for meetings every week, and he's showing us everything about his restaurant. And I mean, and it motivates you to work hard,
yeah, right,
to keep, to keep things going well, whether it's busy or slow.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fantastic experience. I came back to DC. I just kind of decided that San Diego was a little bit of a culinary wasteland. I mean, I was learning a lot of good,
sure,
things, but the food scene, if I'd been in San Francisco, I may have never left. But,
yeah, but the beaches.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I lived on the beach in Solana Beach, and I could ride my bike to work, and it was pretty awesome. So a year and a half of that, and I decided it was time to go get serious again. It was too much having,
yeah,
fun, and,
yeah,
the beach was always a distraction. So I came back to D.C., and I got back in another what we'll call real restaurant job. And it was, 6 days lunch and dinner at Galileo Monday through Saturday. And it was brutal. I mean, it was
so
long days.
So you worked for Roberto Donna, who's kind of a madman,
right? Mad scientist, we'll call,
yeah,
him.
Yeah. Was he, at that time, was he still in the kitchen there?
Yeah, he had two restaurants when I started there. It was just Galileo and Imati.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was still there about half the time.
Right.
I worked for him for a year and a half. By the time I left, he was on his eighth restaurant and soon to be like 15th restaurant. So
right,
he was blowing up. I mean, he won his Beard Award while I was there. He got, cover of Washingtonian, Esquire,
yeah,
magazines, tell everybody the best Italian restaurant in the country, et cetera. So it was really, really cool to be a part of that. VIPs everywhere. The best product I've seen that I've worked with anywhere to be able to,
yeah,
put my hands on it was working for him. But the chef lessons were poor, honestly. I mean, the chef lessons were poor. The waste was, taught me a lot of bad habits. It took me a while to unlearn, and being in,
right,
business for myself was a good place to start,
Yeah.
But that was the one thing that, he did. He blew up and got so successful, and he didn't take care of things the way he had once done when he was running everything and doing it himself.
Sure.
He had a great chef de cuisine who was super good guy. I just don't think he was enough of a ball breaker to kind of keep things in line. And I mean, it's just one of those, it was one of those places where they just had these automatic orders coming in, and you go into the walk-in and there's like 20 pounds of morels, and there's 20 pounds of portobellos, and there's 20 pounds of shiitakes, and then there's another 50 pounds coming in on a dolly. Like, where the heck are we going to put them? Where,
yeah,
are they going to go? Like, so the steward would be looking like, well, these are a week old. Get rid of them. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
Really? We couldn't make soup or throw them in the stock pot or something? I mean, no. It was like trash can. It was crazy. They could never say no to a farmer. They would bring us anything and everything, and we would do the best we could to work with it. But it just, sometimes it was just, it was a lesson of what not to do when you were in charge.
Yeah, yeah. I've been guilty of that a little bit.
Yeah.
Not being able to say no to the farmer,
yeah,
just getting everything. My guys are like,
yeah,
chef, what the hell are we going to do with this? I'm like, we'll figure it out. Don't worry. We're going to do something with it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, cool. So really nice foundation in a very kind of short period of time, right?
Right. Right.
And then, so then the aha moment, dad says, you ready? Just like that, huh?
He had a lot
of faith in you. Tell me, you'd said earlier, you were talking about work ethic. Was there something, as a child, you're working for your dad at the pizzeria. Did he ever give you like, his own isms? Like, did he have words he said to you? Like
shit or son of a bitch?
Yeah.
Those are the ones I remember.
Did you ever try to correct him for cussing when you were a kid?
No, he didn't do it. He used those two a lot. But aside from that, like, I introduced him to the rest later.
Oh, did you?
So as in his 50s, he really,
yeah, okay,
kind of came into his own. Because
my kids used to say, Dad, please, my friends are here. This isn't the kitchen. So I can see that. But did he ever give you like these little tidbits of advice that stay in your head that made you really want to do that hard work?
My dad has been in this country. He came from Greece as an immigrant at the age of 26. So he's been here for 46 years. And you wouldn't know it having a conversation with him because he sounds like he just came over.
Yeah.
And so it's not to say the language has escaped him by any means. The man has owned 8 different restaurants, various degrees of success, but mostly very successful.
Right.
And he's gotten it done somehow. But he didn't have tidbits of really interesting information to kind of share with me. But what I did learn was hard work. I did learn that no matter what they threw at him, he could overcome it by working his butt off. That's and that's what he did. You know, he took Sundays off. He worked all the rest of the time. I mean, I joke now. I'm like, my kid's been playing soccer for 3 years. You've seen 10 times. No, you've seen an infinite amount of games more than of mine, because you never saw me play soccer once, except in the yard when I would be the goalie and you kick the ball, hit me in the face. Like, you never saw me play, you know, never. And that's the battle I have now as a dad myself, and my kids playing soccer. And do I have time to run up to Saka or to Darden Tow and lose an hour and a half of my Saturday when it's busy to go see it? Yeah, I better go.
Yeah.
Because role reversal.
Well, I don't want to have that regret. This is the cool segue now into this family life thing, because, you know, you're a chef. You've been doing this now. You've had the restaurant 16 years, right? Is that what it is, 16 years? And, you know, you've done great. You never really hear a bad review about your restaurant. And I'm sure every once in a while you look on the blogs or whatever, somebody might say something. But for the most part, it's very solid, you know, and you do really great work. So you're out there. What does it take physically and mentally, and what kind of sacrifices do you think you've made for your family? Again, you know, not for your family, but for the business over your family, maybe.
Right. When we started it, my then-girlfriend, fiancé, now wife, you know, we worked all of the hours together. We went to work together. We had staff together. We went home together. We drove one car most of the time. Mm-hmm. So we were very, very connected. And so for my family unit, Farrell and me, it was great. It was perfectly fine. We opened a second restaurant in 2000 with Wild Greens at Barracks Road, just kind of helping my dad do something for himself, doing his own thing. I didn't have a whole lot of the day-to-day stuff, but I mean, I wrote recipes and trained staff and helped him out when he needed help. So things were good in that regard, that we were connected. My parents and I didn't have much time, because I was the one working, you know, and by the time they came down, well, I shouldn't say by the time my mom came down, when we came down originally, my dad came down a couple years later. But we all got really busy, you know, basically is what it boils down to. In 2001, I had a son, and we still have one, because that's the best formula, is having one for us, you know, really. I mean, we'll have a couple of dogs and a couple of other rugrats around, but, you know, we have one that we've got to really, you know, grow and take care of. And that's the best we can do with 18 or 20 other surrogate children, we'll call them, at work.
Yeah,
that
right.
Always have something going on that they need a pat on the back or hug.
My wife will like hearing that.
You know, I mean, there's always something special that is required. So we feel pretty fulfilled with everyone else we can reach out to, but you know, taking care of the one is really, it's the struggle. And that's where, you know, now I'm 40 and I still work my restaurant the same way I did when I was 24.
Right.
We just got through graduation weekend and I've been yawning every day at work at 5 o'clock, just going, God, I need to catch up. And it was a lot easier back then, but the way I run my restaurant's the same, and maybe I'm a fool for doing it. It's the only way I know how. It's the way I know how to do it. Tie me to the stove and throw those tickets at me, and I will keep on producing the food, and we will just do what we do. And at some point, I'm going to have to transition to owner of a restaurant, and eventually that'll happen. But I'm just not ready. I'm not ready.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to let go, I think, part of it. And really, you know, I look at the P&L statement, I'm like, well,
Who am I going to pay?
I got to get a job. You know, I'm going to have to get another job if someone's going to do my job.
Yeah, right.
It's, you know, we're not to say we're at a crossroads, but we're constantly learning. We're constantly changing and evolving. And so when Alex was born, you know, in 2001, it took Farrell and me 3 years at least to recover, like as a couple,
right,
from being a restaurant couple before to being a family. It took a good while, and we're in the best place now than we've ever been. Pre-kid, pre-restaurant, anything, we're in the best place we've ever been. But no joke, I mean, it's work.
Yeah.
It's work. And so you get into the restaurant life.
Let me tell you, when my kids went to college, that was one of the greatest days of my life. just
no
kidding,
doubt.
Just kidding. But it's almost true. So now to your chef job, how do you stay fresh? How do you stay excited and motivated about the food? Where do you draw inspiration? You know, all those kind of things.
I'm just one who believes that inspiration and learning can come from anywhere as long as you know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's eating in another restaurant. Sometimes it's reading a cookbook. Sometimes it's looking on the internet. But the most consistent thing I've had for the last 6 months really is a couple of the guys from the restaurant. We've got a friendly stage who comes and works with us a couple days a week.
Right.
Who has a day job, has a career, loves to cook, wants to learn more. We all go over to Josh's house. We have a couple beers. We talk about food. Started out trying to watch Top Chef. That's how it started out. But now we don't even turn the TV on anymore, and we just talk food. And sometimes the conversation will revolve around a dish someone decided to make and bring. Sometimes it revolves around a big fat Asaba pork chop I'll bring. Sometimes it's just chips and salsa, and we all laugh at how many jars of salsa I can eat in one sitting with two beers in front of me. So,
You
know, it all changes, but that's been one of the great things. And it's, you know, some of my local chef friends that I've had relationships with over the years, they come out as they are available and we have these conversations, and it's been really cool to either talk about ideas or talk about what we're doing or talk about where we've been. And that really keeps me excited about working, and that keeps me excited about doing my job. And so, you know, I was having a conversation with my mother-in-law just a couple weeks ago, and she'd love for me to tell her we were going to open up a sandwich, sub, and pizza shop.
Sure.
And open a second one and a third one. She'd love for me to tell her that. She's an accountant. She's a CPA.
Yeah, yeah.
And God bless her. Thank you for caring, you know. But I told her, I said, I've done that before, working for my dad. I know what that's like, and it would not fulfill me. It would not keep me happy. It would not get me going to work every day. I love my job.
Right.
With the exception of Monday this week, I think was the first time in 16 years I really didn't want to go to work, and I had to. I really would have loved to have just stayed home. Wasn't an option.
You'll have a few more of those Mondays.
I hear you. But I love going to work. Yeah. I love what I do. It's a lot. It's challenging. It's exciting. It's inspiring. Making people happy, eating your food is an intoxicating thing. I mean, really, it's amazing. And maybe the pats on the back are great. Maybe that's it. You know, but I like to think that just contributing to someone's happiness in our own little unique way is what it is.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. And I don't want to give it up.
So what? Tell everyone, anyone who's listening, they come to IVN, what's your hope for them when they come there to your restaurant?
To feel like they've come into my home and being taken care of as though they were my guest. Mm-hmm. Not the client restaurateur relationship as much as a staff who's pretty excited about the food that we cook, or, you know, the creasy greens we got from Phil and Deirdre in Stanton, you know, or the smoked trout this week from Ellen, or, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, the relationships we built over the years that certainly not unique to a restaurant in Charlottesville by any means, but it's ours, you know, what we do, it's ours. It belongs to us. And, you know, our staff a lot of them have been with us for a long time. We've seen a lot of people come and go, but I mean, I've got guys that have been with me for 10 years and, you know, it makes a special relationship, I think, amongst our staff, which translates into the experience for our customer. And so we talk a lot about, you know, we're doing this and this is great, but what else can we do?
Yeah.
Every time I'm always asking, like, what else can we do? I know you think we do it all. What else can we do for a customer to make them feel welcome, to make them feel excited, to make them go to work tomorrow and tell their coworkers about their experience?
Sure.
And, you know, it's constantly trying to raise that bar. And so that's what we try to do. And more often than not, I mean, I don't want to say we hit the mark. Of course, we don't hit the mark every time. Nobody anywhere hits the mark every single time. But our success rate's pretty good, and I feel good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since, Angelo, since this is the first and last time you're ever going to talk about yourself, and this is going to be on, you know, on the internet for eternity, one last thing. What do you want people to know about you? Your, you know, anything. The last, how do you want people to remember you? How's that? The epitaph. God. It's not an epitaph, but how do you want people to feel, to think of you, Angelo Vangelopoulos?
I didn't say it right, you know?
It's hard.
I can make a song out of that.
It's hard to think in those terms.
Yeah.
I struggle to say what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I can say right now, my focus more than anything is to, as much as possible, I work on having my family unit, my wife and son, to be the most important part of my universe.
Mm-hmm.
The universe happens to be the IVN.
Right.
And so I try to engage him, his friends, his classmates, his teachers, anyone I can. I try to get involved with what they're doing and be involved with what he's doing in whatever time I can scratch together every week. So it sounds kind of lame to say, but I want to be the chef who didn't let his kid grow up and not see what he'd done where he'd been. And, you know, I mean, I guess that's what I want to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so how I'm remembered for that, I have no idea, but I know that that's my goal. That's what
I'm
shooting
for.
So
a good goal. Imagine if you were Tucker Yoder with 5 children.
Oh,
I think he has 5.
God, yeah.
And
he just had the 5th. He was having a beer with me the night his wife had the 5th. He was like, the wife's going to have the kid any day now. He's like, the wife's going to have the kid any day now. I said, all the more reason to come have a beer with me tonight, because next thing you know, you're not going to be able to have one. And so he's there. We're hanging out, having a good old time, just talking about stuff. And he's new at the Clifton and everything. And then all of a sudden he gets a text. He's like, wow, I should have been gone a long time ago. He's like, I got to go. And he sends me a text like 1:30 in the morning, you know.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good advice for Tucker tonight. Good luck, buddy.
Thank you, Chef Craig. Thank you, sir.
Anyway, thanks for being here with us. I enjoy talking to you. I've always enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, sir.
Even more now, and I think people are going to really enjoy this. Folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat. You can find us. Of course, you already did find us at SevillePodcast.com. Our wonderful producer, Mike Bisaglia, here tonight with us. And hopefully you were inspired, sometimes appalled. Hopefully you're going to sound out. Let us know what you think we can do better. We will have some recipes going online this week. So look at chewfat.net for recipies. Hey, you can get me a couple of recipes?
Sure.
You might have heard
Greek meatballs.
The Greek meatballs. That's, folks, you're going to want to see this. Anyway, thanks for listening. Craig Hartman out.
This song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage. And we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there. There was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."